Penguin Random House Audio presents The Other Half by Charlotte Vissel. Read for you by Imogen Wild and Michael Mayunda.
What men, O gods, are these? What maidens loath? What mad pursuit? What struggle to escape? What pipes and timbrels? What wild ecstasy. Ode on a Grecian Urn, John Keats.
He was misanthropic and gifted with the sly, sharp instinct for self-preservation that passes for wisdom among the rich. Put out more flags. Evil in war. Saturday. Chapter 1. A girl is dying. A girl who wears bespoke perfume. She wants you to inhale her deliciousness, to know that she is untouched by the dirt, the smog, the filth of your London. Pathetic men rub their underdeveloped legs against her arse as they commute to their piteous careers on the hamster cage tube. She wants other women to covet her manicure as she types an empowering Instagram post about her inner glow. People follow her. A beleggined messiah to the inflexible, undesirable, slovenly masses. She drinks spirulina, kombucha and matcha, but she doesn't eat wheat or dairy. She's faking an allergy to mask her disordered eating, which she won't seek help for because it feels so very normal nowadays. It's a shame, she used to like eating bread. She waxes everything. Everything. She is filthy. Filthy. Used to do anything. Absolutely anything if it meant he'd stay with her. A girl is dying. She is savvy, astute, commercially minded, clever. She's clever. She knows that all she really has to sell is the idea of her beauty, her youth, her long rolling vowels, and she does. In the old stories, Pygmalion made Galatea, but this new Galatea made herself and streamed it live. She put it on a t-shirt, on a tote bag, got paid for sharing a link to organic date and cashew nut energy balls, £6.50 for four, not including postage. She believes in self-improvement. She practices her poses and reads her prose. She believes in love and practices that too. She has put so many hours into practicing. Hours and hours, tears and tears, and yet, she can be droll. She'd buy you a drink if you made her laugh. More than once had she bought a big issue. She'd gone to charity fundraising galas, because it would get her into the society pages of Tatler, but still she went and clapped loudly and exclaimed, "How brave!" at the survivors of whatever hideous disease the whole thing was in honour of, and handed over a cheque. She is vain and angry and sad. So very sad. Of course she is sad. Miserable, wretched, plain old unhappy. How could she not be, the poor thing? A girl is dead. A girl who was flawed. No, not the pores on the nose. Those were perfect. Resolutely perfect. Her head had spun, but the world hadn't noticed. It callously carried on spinning as she suffocated on her own bile. Writhing there amongst rotting leaves, her hair infused with the stench of mulch and stomach acid. She deserved better than to die there. To die because of him. Chapter 2. Midsummer Night, North London. The McDonald's in Kentish Town had seen some sights, but this was something different. At 6 p.m, an elegant man strode through the automatic doors, wing collar shirt, cummerbund and silk bow tie. Expensive shoes. Italian. They made a clipped noise when he walked, much like his vowels when he spoke. He strolled up to the counter and asked to speak to the manager. The server peered around him nervously, looking for a non-existent camera. The manager was dutifully found and propositioned like a comely whore. The gentleman, and there really couldn't be another word for a man dressed in such a manner, was going to use the upstairs area, usually reserved for children's parties on Saturday mornings, for a private gathering that evening. His guests were arriving at 7:30 p.m., and the staff were to bring food upstairs. The order had already been courteously written out in fastidious copperplate at 8 p.m. for them. They were not to be disturbed after that. The gentlemen made it very clear that they were to be handsomely recompensed for their efforts and their silence. No one who worked there was to mention it again, and CCTV was to be turned off. The gentleman paid in cash, crisp £50 notes, and gave all the staff, including the poor, poor cleaner, who would have to deal with true horrors tomorrow morning, a nice little tip for all the trouble he was about to cause. A young woman with rippling flame-colored hair brought in vase upon vase of flowers. The smell was divine. Not enough to cover the smell of chip fat, burger grease, and blocked coronary arteries, but heavenly nonetheless. A butler took case after case of champagne upstairs. And it was champagne, direct from a vineyard in Champagne, not from Tesco. Only plebeians drink supermarket plonk, let alone Prosecco. The formal invitation stipulated that the dress code was black tie, photography was strictly prohibited, and it was BYOC. Bring your own Coke. For once, Nell wasn't overdressed. She was, however, uncomfortable. Her feet already hurt from a pair of architecturally complex shoes that she had bought from a pompous boutique in Spitalfields Market. She'd spent a whole month's food budget on them, but she considered that a win-win. Nell's dress was an artful creation of pale lilac gauze and twisted embroidery that she had made herself, the effect of which was somewhere between a drowned innocent from a Millet painting and wrath personified. She was a diaphanous, tortured cobweb. In the soft June breeze, Nell delicately floated like a resplendent vision of hell. She was waiting outside Kentish Town tube station for Alex. Nothing earthly could have persuaded her to go to Rupert's birthday party on her own. And indeed, it had taken much poking and prodding, cajoling and coaxing from silver-tongued Alex to induce her to go with him. They were going to go for something strong beforehand, a nip of liquid bravery. The flower seller on the corner of Leighton Road was packing up for the day. 5 minutes earlier, Nell had enjoyed spectating as a panic-stricken man sprinted from the tube and bought a large bouquet in a frenzy. Anniversary or birthday? Nell asked the florist as she sauntered over and mused over a few bedraggled hydrangeas. Sorry, she replied. The bald man just then, he looked like he'd forgotten an important date. Oh yeah, he said his missus just had a baby at the Royal Free. Wanted some pink flowers. Ah, how sweet, a gender-conforming baby girl. Did he realise that he'd caught the wrong branch of the Northern Line? I didn't have the chance to tell him. Nell looked at the leftovers of the florist's day. The severed head of a luckless ranunculus, the colour of a good claret, floated in a bucket of water. How much for that one? You take it, love. Thank you, Nell said, shaking the water from the flower and tucking it into a roll of her hair. Big night? The flower seller asked, tacitly acknowledging Nell's remarkable appearance. I'm going to Satan's birthday party. A normal Saturday evening, then? Pretty much, thank you for the flower, said Nell as she turned back to face the tube. She was just in time to see Alex rise from the gaping mouth of the station. He was tall, which she thought was the only important quality a man should possess, but clearly feeling uncomfortable in his penguin get-up. Nell thought it suited him. A shapely young woman gave
sample complete. Ready to continue?